The reading this morning will come from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 2, verses 9 through 12. 9 through 11. Ecclesiastes, chapter 2, verses 9 through 11. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. All my wisdom remained with me. And whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart was found pleasure. For my heart found pleasure in my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil that I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. You may be seated.
I remember when a close friend of mine in high school made a statement to me that stuck with me. It wasn't the first time I'd heard the statement, nor would it be the last. But in hearing that statement, it defined within the person who said it the object and the goal of his life. And even these years afterwards, it still resonates in my mind because I know the outcome. He said this, Austin, you know, we only live once. We better live it up. And as stereotypical of a 17-year-old high school student as that sounds, it was the thesis of his life. We only live once, so we better go and live it up. His life and my life took two different paths from that point. I remember a few years ago receiving a phone call in the kitchen of the house that Brianna and I built in Kentucky. And it was a phone call from my older sister. And she called and she said, just want you to know, your friend, the same friend who made that statement to me back at 17 years old, your friend who you haven't spoken with in a while, whose paths have gone down two different directions. He called Dad tonight, my sister said. He called Dad, and he asked the question, Mr. Mike, how do I regain a relationship with God after having lost it for so many years? And I remember the emotions in that moment when a lost teenage friend was asking my father how to come back to the Lord. Now, I wish there was a prodigal story, but his turning has been quite slow. I still prayerfully hope for a better future. But that guy and so many other people in this world have done one thing, seek after pleasure. And you know what each one of them have found? If they haven't found it yet, this is the end, and this is what they will find. You ready for me? Pleasure is a dead end. Pleasure is a dead end that has no lasting purpose. It's the sugar rush that fades as quickly as it came. It's the explosion of energy that actually takes more out of you than it gave to you. Pleasure is the placebo pill that Satan gets us with. There's nothing to it. And the teacher in Ecclesiastes, as we're trying to figure out in this series how to make your life matter, we're looking from the teacher's perspective. And the teacher's perspective is a man of age, a man of experience, a man who's gotten towards the end of his life and who's now looking back and recounting the journey of his life. And at this particular place in the journey in Ecclesiastes 2, he was the guy who sought after pleasure. You could have said this about him. You know, we're only going to live once. Let me figure out how to live it up well. He probably didn't say well, because that would have been the appropriate statement. Let me live it good. But he also didn't speak in English, so none of it actually makes sense. But speaking from his perspective, looking back into this text in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, I'm going to go back up to verse 1. Justin read 9 through 11, but I want us to go all the way back up to verse 1, and I want us to see the goal that he sought after. And he gives it to us, and he tells us plainly what it is. And after finding out what he is seeking, I want us to see the result. And I wonder if he is like the prodigal, or if he is like my friend, whose turn has been much more slow, and the journey hasn't actually come to an end. So he says in verse 1, as a matter of fact, I think I put this on the PowerPoint for us. Yeah, there we go. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. He said, let me seek this out. A way to find sensuality and pleasure, physical gratification in this life. Maybe there will be meaning there, but behold, this also was vanity. In other words, it was meaningless. He said, I said of laughter, it's mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold of folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. Notice a couple things that he sought after while trying to find the goal of pleasure. Do you see the first one there? Laughter. Now, I love to laugh. I have inserted far too many jokes in way too many inappropriate settings where laughter was not the thing that should be done. That's just who I am. And I'm continually trying to work with it, all right? So give me some grace. But this is not just the laughter that comes at the end of a good joke. This is not just the laughter that I find when I hear my children say something silly. This is the laughter that is incessant. This is laughter that is all-consuming. This is laughter that is so all-consuming and so incessant that it actually controls the person and they are unable to evaluate the appropriate parts of life. So someone's hurting and suffering in spiritual sin, this person would go and then laugh at them. Someone is suffering with a lack of confidence and they don't know who they are, the direction they should live their life. This person, this type of laughter is the one that laughs at that person. This is the person that watching the news sees the evil and the vile that is there, how Satan is really controlling this world, and he laughs at that. That's this laughter. It's not just your everyday end of a joke laughter. Well, what did he find about that laughter? There's no meaning in it. He goes on later to say in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 4, actually, that there's a time to weep and a time to laugh. And so he actually gives us the appropriate type of laughter, and it's good for the soul. But this laughter is one that's seeking after self-gratification and pleasure, not able to understand what is actually going on in front of their face. It's a self-denial. Because you're not seeing what's truly there. And not just with laughter, he also goes and says in verse 2, how to cheer my heart and my body with wine. And if you look into the text of the entirety of chapter 2, and you can even look at a couple of times up here in these first three verses, what he's seeking after is self-gratification. It's a pleasure. Something that pleases his body physically. And what he'll find over and over again is that there's nothing to it. The first one is laughter. The second one is wine. Purely sensual, self-centered endeavor. And when somebody consumes himself with wine, which, by the way, I don't think this person, this teacher, this preacher, I don't think he gave himself up to be a drunkard. I don't think he just went out and got wasted all the time. Because if you notice in the text, here's what it says. I search with my heart how to cheer my body with wine. Note, my heart still guiding me with wisdom. So it seems like he kept his mental capacities with him. And this is why I think it's important to point this out. Not everybody goes out and just gets wasted and drunk all the time. But some people want to, what? Take the edge off a little bit. And not just taking the edge off, but taking the edge off a little bit so as to please themselves and to become self-indulgent And this preacher, this teacher, he went down that road and he traveled that path. And here's what he found. There's nothing to it. It's useless. Vanity. It's meaningless. Why? Because I personally think, and I think I agree with the teacher here in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing sacrificial, servant-centered, and helpful when it comes to wine. So laughter, wine, what else did he seek after? Exterior works. This is important because he goes from all of these self-centered inner person things, and then he skips to the next part. I actually didn't put that out there. My bad. I pasted the same verses of 1 through 3. So let me look at my Bible, and you're going to look in yours too. Verses 4 through 6. So after going from the laughter and the wine and how it's folly and there's nothing to it, it's vanity and meaningless, he said this in verse 4, and I made great works. I built houses. I planted vineyards. For who? Are you looking at your version of the word? For myself. Verse 5, I made, watch this, myself gardens and parks, planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. Watch this in verse 6. I made who? Myself. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. Did you notice that each one of those were also in the plural? I built houses. I planted forests. I made pools. All of these in the plural, showcasing to us an extreme amount of stuff, not just one, but multiple and pluralities of each one. What does that mean? One wasn't good enough. Church, listen to me. If your life goal is to seek something that is satisfying from the world and pleasurable to the body, one will never be good enough. If I can just get that car, but now that car is a couple of years old, now I need the truck. But that truck's not new enough or big enough, so I need the tires. Well, now the car is old, so I might save it and just get a new one. You see, one's not enough. One's not enough. I'm married to a wonderful woman. I'm married to a wonderful husband. But if you're just seeking pleasure, one's not enough. Got a good job. Makes a good amount of money. But this amount of money is, guess what? Not enough. If you just seek pleasure, one's not enough. And he did that. What did he find? It's not enough. Now, the next couple of verses might seem strange in our current cultural context. In verses 7 through 8, he said, I made great works with houses and the vineyards, the gardens and parks, the fruit trees, all of these things. He did it for himself, which showcases us that one is not enough. And then we see in verses 9, 10, and 11, so I became great. I became great. I know I skipped past verses 7 and 8 where he talks about all the workers of the fields. My translation says servants. Other translations say slaves. He had multiple of men and women. And those men and women, servants, they had children. According to the biblical text, the law that God gave, if you have servants who have children, those children become your right of possession to work on in your home and on your land. Now, I would also go as to say this. Working for a God-fearing person back in that time would have been way better than working for somebody who's not a God-fearer. And I don't want to talk about slaves and servants at this point. That can be another time, another conversation. But what did he have? All of it. Everything and anything you could ever imagine as far as the world standards is concerned. So he says in verse 9, I became great, surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. If this was Solomon, in fact, maybe talking about kings or any rich, wealthy person who had gone on before him. He had more, and he had it all. But he kept this little piece of wisdom, verse 9. My wisdom remained with me. And then verse 10, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. This literally could be translated like this. Anything that my eyes requested of, or anything that my eyes asked for me to go get, I went out and I got it. I can't tell you how long I've been looking at a Toyota Tacoma. From 14 years old, I was looking up with dial-up internet, waiting 30 seconds to load one picture. I've been looking at a Toyota Tacoma. I've been denying myself that, probably because I don't have the money to buy that. But he said everything that his eyes asked of him, that they laid hold of, he not only looked at and desired, but he went and he got it. Everything. I kept my heart from no pleasure physically. For my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and here's the reward. This is the product. This is the result. This is the end game for my 17-year-old friend who made the statement to me, we only live once, we might as well live it up. I knew the end game then, and I still know it now. He might still be searching for it. Maybe some of us are too. Let me give you the end game. Pleasure. For a moment. But the car gets old. The house gets small. The money fades. The stuff grows weathered. The plants grow and die and come back and die. One's never enough. And all of it in and of itself is meaningless. If that is all we seek after. You've seen it. I've seen it. I've seen people who seek and work and sacrifice to attain the stuff. And then the stuff does not satisfy the hunger of the heart. And so what happens to the stuff? They keep seeking more stuff, bigger stuff, more expensive stuff, more costly stuff. And I'm not just talking about money. Because that's in the moment where families become broken, children's lives become broken, and the person's self becomes broken. Because it's never enough. It's an insatiable desire and hunger that Satan gives this placebo pill for. Here, take this. It will be enough. But it's never enough. We know that, don't we? I hope we do. Maybe if you don't believe that there is one who is enough. Maybe today's message is for you. That he is enough. Because here's what the teacher found. Going after all these things. I will live, find pleasure, and die. And if my God was pleasure, my death is meaningless. My life was useless. But if in my life I find something that has long-lasting value and meaning, not only will my death have meaning, but my life will find purpose. But seeking after pleasure will not be it. Jesus tells us that whatever you seek, you'll find. Now, I know he has some spiritual connotations there, but if you seek it, you will find it. I've heard people say, well, I tried to pursue God, but really I found that God isn't real, so now I'm an atheist. No, you sought what you found. You were looking for something and you found it. So what does Jesus say? What does the Scripture say? Well, it says to seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. So I'm supposed to seek the things that are above. And we know from Hebrews 11, chapter 11, verse 6, that it's impossible without faith. Please him. For whoever draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who diligently what? Seek him. So I've got to seek the things that are above. Well, hey, that's where God is. And so now, according to Matthew 6:33, like Jesus said, guess what I can do? I can seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And then all these things will be added to me. That's my aim and that's my goal. So seek the things that are above, where God is. Kingdom in life. Luke 19, verse 10, the Son of Man, he came to seek and save the lost. And so do you see the equation that's building? My life is devoted to that which is above, where God is. Kingdom-oriented choices and life practices. While I'm seeking lost souls to come along the journey with me. And so when that happens, you know what the result is? Pain. Oh. Well, this is no anti-joke. I was never going to say the result is pleasure. Because that's not the promise for this life. When I orient myself to seek above God, kingdom, souls, you know what the result is? The pain of denial. I want you to think about a baby. When a baby is born, you know what it is that they want? Whatever in the world they want. Pleasure. Any single thing that could cause pain in any single way is automatically a bad thing to a baby. Because in the infancy of life, any semblance or any degree of pain is automatically wrong. And I don't want it and I don't need it in my life. But what do we figure out as we live in this life and as we mature in this life? What did the teacher from Ecclesiastes figure out as he traveled down this journey? Here's what he figured out, church. Maturing people see the purpose in the pain. Growing, mature people look back and see pain as one of the most valuable experiences this life has to offer. Could it be, as Greg said to us this morning, that the greatest gift ever given was bought by and through pain? Jesus himself saying, I didn't come to do my will, but to the Father's will. I didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many. The pain-bought price of saving the world. You see, we see the pain in denial. But we don't just see the pain. Mature people understand the purpose. The most valuable and long-lasting things you have in your life, guess what? They came through pain. I just spoke with a person who built a house that said it took him 2 years. And I could just see the agony on his face. He said, I will never do it again. I'm going to live in a cardboard box before I build another house. If you've done it, you probably know a bit of what I'm talking about. But he loves his home. But that's just brick and mortar. It'll go away. How about your marriage? My marriage is the second most meaningful thing in my life other than my God. You think it's been pain-free? No. Has yours? Of course not. If you're a parent, what about children? You know how children are brought into this world? Through the suffering of pain of a mother. And which mom would say, I do not value my children? Of course mothers will say, they are so valuable to me. Married people should say, my marriage is so valuable to me. Homeowners should say, my home is so valuable to me. The teenager who saves and saves and saves, and they don't get the new phone, they don't get the new shoes, they don't get the new clothes, because what? They're looking to buy that first car. And when they buy that first car, guess what they do? They wash it 3 times a day and let nobody touch it. Because they understand the purpose in the pain. The pain of denial is one of the most important experiences that our God has saved for us. So we deny ourselves the pleasure. We deny ourselves the self-seeking gratification of the stuff. Why? Because in the pain of denial, we see the purpose of God. To seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. We see the purpose in the pain, and therefore find the purpose of God, because we are kingdom-minded people. We sacrifice opinions. We sacrifice time. We sacrifice resources for those, guess what? Lost souls who Jesus said, I came to seek and to save. Seeking pleasure is pointless. And we find the purpose of life in the pain of denial. I want you to remember that phrase. Because the next time that Satan tempts you with the placebo pill of sin, you can remember this pleasure is pointless. God's purpose for my life is to deny myself. Hasn't somebody said that before? To deny oneself, to take up your cross and follow me. Jesus himself said the purpose of your life is to put aside those pointless physical pleasures and know and experience the pain of denial. And church, I'm not saying that we have to live in a completely suffering mentality and an immense state of pain continually. What I'm saying is this. When it comes to the pleasure of myself within my body, within this world, I sacrifice it for the purposes of God and the furtherance of His kingdom in this place. And here's what is amazing. After this sacrifice, after these momentary pains and denial, you know what is promised in the next life? All the pleasure imaginable. And so I can deny myself the moment so God can give to me the eternity. The pleasure in this life is pointless. But as we see the purpose and the pain of denial, we can anticipate God's gift of pleasure. Being seated where Christ is, in heaven, in the throne room of God. That's why the teacher could say, the end of the matter is this. Fear God and keep His commandments. Not just my self-seeking gratification. So if you haven't denied yourself appropriately yet, meaning sacrifice your life and give it to Christ because He sacrificed His and He gave His life as a ransom for many, I want you to ask yourself, have I truly begun to understand the purpose in the pain? Maybe you're suffering, you're in the midst of some pains, and you can't yet see the purpose. You don't have a prodigal story yet where you've come back to the Father and you've been reunited with the Father. Maybe you're just lost in the suffering. And maybe today the Spirit is stirring something up within you and He's pricking your heart. And He's sparking something within you because Jesus said the Spirit will come and He'll convict the world concerning sin, righteousness, and judgment. And maybe He's convicting you today to find the purpose in your pain. But if you feel lost in it, come talk to me. Come talk to one of our five shepherds who are here to shepherd the sheep. All I know is this. Jesus will go to seek and save the one lost soul. If that's your soul today, please let Jesus save you and let us help you in the journey. We want to help you as we stand and sing this song together.